the committee reports for today. We will now move to agenda item two. This is open public input. Nikki, would you read the preamble, please, and then tell me how many people we have, etc.?
Sure. We will now take public comment from attendees. As a reminder, everyone receives 3 minutes for comment. Everyone is currently muted, so if you have a question, please raise your hand. If you're on the computer, the raise hand button appears under your name. If you're on the phone, please press *9 and wait to hear you have been unmuted. That's your indication it is your turn to speak. All right. So far, we've got 7, and I know I've got at least 4 that I'm grouping together for e-bikes. So we're just going to start with it. The first is Bob McCoy. Go ahead, Bob. You've been unmuted.
Good morning, Commissioners. Bob McCoy from Sammamish, Washington. First, I'd like to thank Commissioners Kehoe and Smith for their service to the Commission, to wildlife, and to Washington State. And I'd like to welcome the new Commissioners, Fred Kuntz and Lorna Smith, to the Commission. I've worked with both Lorna and Fred, and their knowledge and science-driven approach will bring valuable perspective to the Commission. I admit, though, I was gobstruck by the inaccurate and rude public op-ed offered by what has always seemed a collegial board. I'm sure the new commissioners will rise above the insult. Regarding the dog training rule, I believe you should chase it up a tree and hold it at bay until there's a better understanding of the impacts to cougars, wolves, dogs, and public safety. In my letter to the commission, I provided internal WDFW documents that indicated staff has a far less rosy view of this rule than presented by managers. But now I've learned WDFW might not distribute emails sent to commission@dfw.wa.gov, but just include them in management prepared summaries. The SEIS 2015 through 221 states decisions will be based on scientific principles and evaluated by WDFW, and when determined necessary by the department, an external scientific review panel of experts in predator-prey ecology will review the relative risk to all affected species and habitats. I've seen no action on this. WDFW density study cited by WDFW to set new guidelines shows the Northeast counties having a density of less than 2 cats per 100 square kilometers. A presentation to the commission stated in 2 PMUs, we adjusted the guidelines so they did not exceed an assumed density of 4.15 cougars per 100 square kilometers. What was wrong with the peer-reviewed research by 6 WDFW biologists? Further, the assumed densities were based on harvest numbers with zero knowledge of hunter effort. The supplemental EIS tells us science and the professional judgment of biologists is the foundation for all objectives and strategies identified in the plan. At times, the science may not be as strong as managers would like. In those instances, management actions will be more conservative to minimize the potential for significant negative impacts to hunted wildlife species. Doubling research density numbers is not conservative. Peer-reviewed studies using decades of data from Washington, several other states, and British Columbia show a strong correlation between cougar mortalities and subsequent complaints. The recent increase in public safety removals by DFW and others are driven by fear and advertising, plus the director's memo to just kill the cats, regardless of the cat's actual behavior.
Time, Bob.
Go ahead, Nikki.
Oh, go ahead and wrap it up, Bob, please.
Okay, Santa Cruz Puma Project researchers have shown pumas avoid humans. The researcher states mountain lions fear us, and that fear has all kinds of impacts on their behavior and ecology. The rule as written is silent on the energetic cost to our big cats as well as other wildlife training. So I suggest that you go ahead and delay making this rule and look at the science and especially the new science. Thank you.
Bob, thank you very much for your comments. Next, Nikki, please.
Next, we've got Gabrielle Gilbert, followed by Harriet Allen. Go ahead, Gabrielle.
Hi, thank you. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
Great. My recommendation as a public stakeholder who takes her responsibility of protecting the resources of our state and as it pertains to wildlife as afforded to me by the state law, I seek for the commissioners to table the request and motion for approval for the hound hunting program, the WAC 220412-130. In tabling this WAC, we acknowledge that the recommended adjustments by the staff at Fish and Wildlife are recognized as important inserts into the model policy and reflect the WDFW's commitment to existing WAC rules that include public input and concerns. We ask that the new commissioners are given the necessary time to review this policy as it is acknowledged by Fish and Wildlife as a controversial law and the sensitivity the public feels around this subject. While I understand the Dog Handlers Act as an important capacity for the state and the program is a non-lethal pursuit and training, I am coming from Clickitat County, where a problematic sheriff crafted a policy that has led to the indiscriminate killing of cougars and harvesting numbers and is using the false flag of public safety. We see the sheriff and the members of his 150-man posse unlawfully utilizing the sheriff's new policy for personal hunting opportunities and for the utilization of hound hunting in pursuit of sighted cougars. Clickitat County is a cautionary tale for unintended consequences of policy and the perils of a program that lacks oversight. And we would request that the commissioners find a committee to discuss this policy and the problems around it. And we request that the commissioners would table this program for the hound hunting so that we can continue to have public input and can address the unintended consequences to outline further what the program does, how the logbooks work, why is there a 10-day lapse before logbooks are placed, what is considered a successful dog training pursuit, and what that looks like. And for the public to have more buy-in, and that's what we request, that you table this for today to allow for more time and more discussion and more input and to address the seriousness of what's happening in Clickitat County with a policy that has gone amok and is affecting the harvest of cougars just in this past year since the policy in Clickitat was presented to Fish and Wildlife. I thank you for your time. Congratulations to the new commissioners. Thank you for the hard work that was done by the commissioners who are outgoing. And I appreciate that you consider that the public would like more time for the hound hunting program to be thoroughly vetted before approval. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Nikki, next, please.
Next, we have Harriet Allen, followed by Michelle Blake. Go ahead, Harriet. Make sure to unmute yourself.
Nikki, it appears we still have 24 or 25 people on the list. I don't believe we can add any more based on the constraints of our agenda. So please work in that direction.
Sure. Harriet, you should be unmuted. Go ahead.
Thank you. Good morning, commissioners. My comments are in reference to Commissioner Thorburn's recent statements in multiple newspapers. I believe these statements were incredibly disrespectful to Washington citizens and promoted fear-mongering that hunting is under attack because of views on wildlife management held by many citizens of the state. This misguided verbalizing in the newspapers is the exact opposite of what we need from our leaders today, a time when Fish and Wildlife agencies recognize that things are rapidly changing in the field of fish and wildlife conservation, a time when the Association of Fish and Wildlife Agencies, AFWA, is looking for ways for the agencies to stay relevant. AFWA produced a relevancy roadmap as a guide to help in these efforts, As with the department's strategic plan, it recognized the challenges and changes needed to ensure a conservation legacy. The goal of both is simple: enhance conservation through broader engagement. To achieve this, OFFL recommends that agency leadership and governing bodies need to demonstrate the commitment to being more inclusive of diverse perspectives and interests. They highlight that leaders must set the example, an expectation that the agency will engage and serve broader constituencies. Our strategic plan has the same goals of partnerships, expanding the voices at the table, and engaging the broad public. That is what makes the commissioner's comments so shockingly out of touch with the needs of today. One of those quotes, "We manage it for all Washingtonians, not just urban Washingtonians," is not only insulting to urban citizens, but I also doubt that all commissioners believe that they're being asked to manage only for urban citizens. The commissioner referred to decision-making being limited to determinations of supply impairment. I don't believe the majority of Washington citizens view our fish and wildlife as a supply coming off the conveyor belt waiting to be killed, nor would they narrowly interpret the commission's role as to simply determine when there's an impairment. We are not limited to this low bar. We need to be responsive to the views of society as well. The most stunning statement was that I don't think wildlife conservation and management should be by majority view on wildlife. Again, an incredible insult to Washington citizens and to management of the public trust. Of course, societal views will determine decision-making for the public trust. We're not the Department of Hunting. We're the Department of Fish and Wildlife with a mandate to preserve, protect, and perpetuate, and then provide sustainable use. We are a department that wants to remain relevant. When commissioners, citizens, and department staff work to have a more science-driven and ethical approach to wildlife management, and when lawsuits are filed to uphold the law, they are not attacks on hunting. They are fulfilling a public trust responsibility. Commissioners serve all Washington citizens. We need you to build bridges, not divide us through us and them rhetoric. We need you to demonstrate that you will respectfully engage and serve broader constituencies in managing Washington's fish and wildlife. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Nikki, next, please.
Next, we've got Michelle Blake, and then I'm going to roll into my group of e-bike folk. Go ahead, Michelle.
Okay.
Good morning, Chair Carpenter, members of the commission. For the record, again, my name is Michelle Blake. I'm the Western Region 1 coordinator for the Mountain Lion Foundation. And as we know, you're scheduled to vote today on the revised proposal for the non-lethal hound pursuit. And those revisions were not open to public comment. So that brings me to this section today. The proposal is simply a missed opportunity. The department could have created an exemplary, transparent public safety program that's both faithful to the legislative directives and to the voice of the Washington voters who banned recreational hounding by a very large margin. Instead, you received a proposal that would allow training participants to bring along their untrained, unscreened relatives. So besides being unprofessional and a significant safety risk, this creates a recreational activity, a spectator sport that Washington voters overwhelmingly rejected. And we think 50 teams is excessive when 20 would do. The proposal has too few safety protections, and it's not faithful to the legislative directives that created it. That legislation called for a training program to respond to bear and bobcat and cougar safety risks. Instead, you have a proposal that's only a gift to hounding enthusiasts who want more opportunities to chase cougars. And the current rule language directs teams to not knowingly chase female cats with spotted kittens, which is senseless. Once the dogs pick up a scent and the cat tries to escape, there's no way to know whether that cat has spotted kittens stashed nearby. And no one can train dogs to not chase cats with spotted kittens. These are empty attempts at putting safety in, and they're not sufficient. So we need the commission to listen to your own experts on this issue. Please think very critically about the impact of unsupervised hound teams and their relatives chasing and treeing cougars across the state, especially on the heels of this commission's vote to increase the cougar hunting quota. In addition to that unsustainable quota, public records show 108 non-hunter cougar deaths in 2020, and those don't include any kills by local and county law enforcement that were not reported to WDFW, and we all know there's a lack of consistent reporting by those agencies. The Mountain Lion Foundation is strongly against this version of the rule, and we ask you to reject this proposal, send it back to the staff, create a proposal that respects the people of Washington, considers wildlife conservation impacts, and provides genuine public safety training. Thank you for the opportunity to comment.
Thank you for your comments, Michelle. Nikki, next, please.
Next, we've got Mark Smith. Go ahead, Mark. Make sure to unmute yourself. Figure out which platform Mark's on here. Okay, Mark, I've unmuted you on either end. So there we go. Are you there?
Okay.
All right.
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yep, we can hear you.
Okay. First, I'd like to thank the commission for serving and taking the time to listen to discuss the future of electric pedal assist bicycles. My name is Mark Smith. I own and operate Eco Park Resort at Mount St. Helens. I have worked and lived in Washington State for over 60 years, making my living from outdoor recreation and ecotourism. During this time, I have driven, hiked, biked, boated, horseback ridden all over this beautiful state, hunting and fishing. In 2018, Washington State legislator passed legislation that defined pedal assist electric bicycles in a new classification, or as we refer to them as e-bikes. This allowed me to buy my first electric horse, or e-bike. One ride and I was hooked. I couldn't believe how much fun it was to ride and how smooth it was to pedal and allow me to get a physical workout and visit my favorite places in the great outdoors. Being a tour guide, resort owner, and outdoor enthusiast, I wanted everyone to be able to experience this new technology, especially my aging friends. So I became a dealer on March 20th, just in time for COVID shutdown. I didn't say I was a good businessman. I said I did enjoy the outdoors. But over the summer, I had plenty of time to learn about these new technologies. In listening to your meeting yesterday, I heard a lot of good questions and concerns and some confusion, like the one where one state agency, State Parks, approves the use of these electric bikes and another is banning them. We are both looking at the same legislation and laws. It would be nice if the state agencies would work together for the public's benefit and create statewide regulations that we could understand. If you haven't ridden an e-bike and you're not familiar with them, they are much like a two-wheel golf cart for the forest. They don't promote reckless activity. They transport you where you want to go with a 1 horsepower, 750-watt motor. They weigh 70 pounds. They're not easy to ride as a regular bicycle being lightweight. They're easier because they're heavier. They make you feel more comfortable. And while they're advertised that they have maximum speeds of 20 miles an hour, I've never been able to pedal that fast since their pedal assist to reach that speed. My average speed on my computer says that I travel about 4.8 miles per hour. I am limited in distance by how much I pedal, how steep the terrain is, how cold it is out, and how big my battery is. My distance I travel is about 6 to 8 miles one way. The average age of an e-bike rider that I have found is 55 and over, and 90% of the riding is on logging roads that are closed to non-motorized vehicles. I heard concerns about safety too yesterday, and I did hear one of the commissioners say that her 4-year-old granddaughter had one. If that's not enough, the CDC safety studies have found that e-bikes have no greater risk than conventional bicycles, and that's why they are considered as non-motorized.
Mark, you're at time.
Thank you for your time. I appreciate
Mark, it. Mark, thank you for your comments. Next, Nikki.
Alrighty. Next, we have Ashley Seward, followed by Cheyenne Smith. Go ahead, Ashley.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you.
Hi. Well, thank you very much for letting me comment today. My name is Ashley Seward. I'm commenting on behalf of the electric bicycle issue on Washington Fish and Wildlife lands. I'm here on behalf of People for Bikes, the national trade association that represents bicycles and electric bicycles manufacturers. And I ask you to please consider opening logging roads to class 1, 2, and 3 electric bicycles and permit class 1 electric bicycles on non-motorized single track trails. I ask you this because class 1 electric bicycles are similar to traditional bicycles in the ways that they are made, sold, and used. Their use is growing across the state and the U.S., and proactive policies must be in place to ensure that outdoor enthusiasts understand the rules and regulations that pertain to electric bicycle usage. Electric bicycles are essential to Washington residents because they have created a new way to recreate and enjoy the outdoors, regardless of age or physical or cognitive ability. Since November of 2019, Washington State Parks has successfully satisfied the demand for this growing technology by allowing class 1 and 3 electric bicycles wherever bicycles are allowed. The apparent lack of complaints or amendments to this policy since its initiation demonstrates that electric bicycles cause no negative impacts to trails. Additionally, a recent study has found that electric bicycle riders are not primarily new riders, but rather experienced bike riders who are simply looking for an extra boost when riding. This shows that allowing electric bicycles is simply a policy to support the current users of Fish and Wildlife lands. Allowing class 1, 2, and 3 electric bicycles on logging roads and class 1 electric bicycles on non-motorized single track trails is a fair and sensible decision and will support Washington residents' continued enjoyment of your lands. For 6 years, People for Bikes has worked with agencies across the country to assist as they transition their regulations to be more inclusive of electric bicycles, and we highly support the work of our local Washington partners. I welcome the opportunity to provide any further comment, and I appreciate your time today. Thank you.
Ashley, thank you for your comments. Nikki, next, please.
Next. Okay. Next, we've got Cheyenne Smith, followed by Aaron Rhodes. Go ahead, Cheyenne.
Can you hear me?
We can hear you.
All right. Good morning. My name is Cheyenne Smith, and I'm here today to testify on behalf of e-bike usage on WDFW lands. I'd like to ask me to make e-bike usage allowed anywhere that mountain bike usage is allowed, as there seems to be a little difference between the e-bikes and the mountain bikes, aside from the pedal assist. As far as public safety and wildlife, there seemed to be no difference, aside from the fact that with the pedal assist, e-bikes have somewhat better control over their speed in that they don't have to go flying down the trail in order to keep up their speed. They actually can keep going at a normal, regular, leisurely pace and make it through the trail. And they're not trying to keep momentum going. They're not banking on corners. They're not doing jumps. Most of them, as has been said before by others, is they weigh 60 to 75 pounds. They're not doing jumps a whole lot. And as far as the users, from what I've seen of these e-bikes, they're actually getting people outside who have formerly not been able to. They're an aging population, or they're out of shape, or they're handicapped, and the door to the outside has been closed to them. And some of which have been mountain bikers in the past and just can't do it anymore. And with the pedal assist, they can. And it's not the difference of going further, higher, and faster for them, but just getting out at all and having that ability and door open to such a larger portion of the population gives the outdoors back to the public. It makes it more accessible. And that's something that I want to see for my family members and friends who are aging, and that I want to be able to do when I get older, because it's sad to see people who have enjoyed the outdoors their whole life not be able to get out and go mushroom hunting or go photography and hiking even. But with this, I can see them do that, and I don't have to worry about them trying to make it back home, because I know with the assist, they can do it, and I can go with them and keep up with them on my bike, or they can go out on their own and we'll be safe. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for your comments, Cheyenne. Nikki, next, please.
Next is Aaron Rhodes, followed by Bruce Barnes. Go ahead, Aaron.
Hi, Commission. My name is Aaron Rhodes, and I'm from Klickitat County in Goldendale, Washington. And I'm in support of using e-bikes on WDFW lands. And like to relate an experience. My cousin drew a tag in that WDFW purchase and the special unit 5382 last summer. And on July 7th, he sent an email to the district office asking if e-bikes were allowed on that 5382 unit. And he got the acknowledgement citing the RCW that they were legal. So with that in mind, we approached the local store here, Morgan Gamble, Two Mountain Outdoors, who is with me right now. And he became a dealer and we bought these bikes for something like $6,000 a piece. Well, while we were waiting for them to show up, a couple weeks later, we got another email that said, no, those are not legal. Well, what are we supposed to do with them then? And so anyway, we used them on that property until the property was posted with no e-bike signs. I don't know if this is the time to allow Morgan to comment, but if he wants to, I guess, I don't know.
Are you still there, Aaron?
Did you guys hear that?
No.
Okay. This is Morgan Gamble. If the commission would allow, I would like to slip in here as I had technical issues getting registered, and actually it wouldn't let me even call in this morning. Would that be okay? I just have a few seconds to...
Yeah, he's on the list, Larry, so it's okay. I just couldn't find him, so...
Yeah, go ahead, please.
Okay. Well, my name is Morgan Gamble. Obviously, I'm the owner of Two Mountain Outdoors here in Goldendale, Washington. We have actually spoken in the past about the local issue we had with WDFW local management making decisions about e-bikes in our area without the proper meetings and public input. We have seen our e-bike sales plummet since the posting of these signs. I share the sentiment and concerns of the fellow speakers and am in support of the e-bikes on public lands. I'm sure my point was made well last time we talked and would like to address a new one. This very commission told me that they would contact me requesting further information on the issue, and I have yet to ever receive any correspondence. To me, this is unacceptable and a very good reason why the trust level that has been previously discussed in WDFW and the commission remains low. With that being said, I hope the commission takes my fellow e-bike enthusiasts seriously and provides an opportunity for the public of Washington to access the land that they pay for. Thank you for this time.
Thank you for your comments as well. Next, Nikki.
Okay, the last one for e-bikes is Bruce Barnes. Where are you, Bruce? There we are. Go ahead, Bruce.
Can you hear me?
Yep, we can hear you.
Hey, good morning, commissioners and chair. And I'd like to first off thank the fellow commissioners for their duty to the state and welcome the new commissioners to their new endeavor that obviously anybody that's been on one of these committees finds it extremely thankless. So anyways, I hope that everybody does a good job in looking into this e-bike situation. My name is Bruce Barnes. I'm a 55-year resident of the state of Washington and an active outdoors person and permanently disabled since 2014. And I'm hoping that Nikki gave each one of the commissioners a picture of all my x-rays and my injuries, and also a picture of the differences between the e-bikes, which if you see in those pictures, there is none. There's no different footprint. The only difference is one is a pedal assist bike. Now, I went through a whole year and 3 months of trying to work through this process with your captain of Fish and Wildlife in Region 5, Jeff Wickersham, and only to come to hunting season this year to have the property that I previously have hunted on my whole life, the third generation, my son's the fourth generation user of this area, be posted with signs, only to find out that your law enforcement honestly encouraged on this TCC committee, along with your biologist, to post this land and told them the verbiage to put on it, which blocked my right to hunt on this property. Then I went through your disabled program to see if I could get a permit to ride down the 7900 road, which is actually still a U.S. Forest Service road, only to say that you're not partners with these people when indeed you are in partnership with this timber company and actually employ not one but two full-time fish and wildlife officers to this property. So my concern is, number one with the commission is, what is the harm in riding these bicycles? Number one, I'd like an answer for that. Number two, we've addressed the dangers in these where they don't go over 20 miles an hour, and the speed limit for any gravel road in fish and wildlife or any timberland is 25 miles an hour. We should be embracing this new technology because obviously the fish and wildlife is facing deficits like every other state organization. You should be embracing this not only for the hunters that want to get out there and hunt, but for recreational enthusiasts that want to get out there and enjoy this property that lays dormant for about 9 months a year. Some of the most beautiful outdoor activities I've found are just riding my bicycle out into the wilderness and having that alone time where I can watch the wildlife interact with each other and listen to the birds chirp and see the beautiful views out there. Now I'm being told that I can't do that or I become a criminal. So I don't want to have to take this to a court system where I take a ticket and I let a judge decide this. I'm hoping by going through this process that we can come to some kind of a positive resolution because I don't feel like there's any impact with these bicycles whatsoever on state, federal, county, or city roads. And our state legislation has made the rules and regulations and then again reviewed the regulations again and unanimously approved these regulations so we can ride these bicycles that are extremely expensive. And we've made a substantial investment to be able to go out and enjoy the outdoors again, because with all these private property owners blocking off their property and blocking state and federal lands, it leaves us no other option to be able to get into these areas because we can't drive to them.
Bruce, you're at time.
So anyways, I appreciate your time and concern and I hope you guys, you know, come to a positive solution on this situation. And I'm looking forward to having any of you get back to me so I can take you on a bike ride or whatever we need to do to resolve this. Thanks so much.
Bruce, thank you for your comments. We will look into that. Nikki, next, please.
Next is Susan D. Kane Ronin, followed by Michael Henderson. Go ahead, Susan.
Hi, this is Dr. Susan Kane Ronning. I am calling right now from Chelan, Washington, where we have property, and then I also have property in Bellingham. So I'm originally from Wenatchee. I grew up in a hunting family. And when I speak with the knowledge of where hunters come from in their ideologies, but I also speak as a wildlife enthusiast who understands the values and beliefs of people who want the Department of Fish and Wildlife to advocate, not just for hunters, but for the general public for whom they're supposed to. So I'm a member of the Sierra Club of Washington State Wildlife Committee. We submitted a letter opposing the rules for the pursuit training program when that was allowed, and I spoke during the comment period in 2020. We oppose the pursuit training program as it is. We do ask for the staff to create a proposal based in science, respectful of voter approval of Initiative 655, and with rules that are humane and represent the will of all the people of Washington, not the select few. The current proposal is not based in science. It supports hounding and cougar hunter enthusiasts, and it provides for spectators. This process makes a mockery of the proposal. It does not value cougars as an apex predator in our state, a vital wildlife species as it relates to all of the species in Washington. It does not protect cougars and their kits and is inhumane, a chief reason why Initiative 655 was substantially approved. With the increased hunting quotas that the Department of Fish and Wildlife has now enacted, it causes further concern regarding the cougar population. So we urge you to go back, drop this current proposal, go back and redraft one based in science and reflective of the will of the entire people in Washington State. I also want to speak regarding the telemeetings because it has allowed for all of us who work, who do not live in access to the meetings that you have in person, to provide comment. It's allowed for you to get a more broad-based representation of what all of the citizens in Washington believe, not the select few that are able to get there on the schedule when the meetings occur. I'm also concerned regarding the further public safety or the public safety definition as it now is written and in law. It allows for the rampant misuse, as is now representative by the sheriff in Klickitat County. He is using this public safety definition to allow for indiscriminate hunting and killing of cougars in his county. I've spoken with wildlife representatives and staff up to the director levels, and what they tell me is that this definition is one of the key reasons why they are not able to change what the sheriff is doing. Lastly, as a taxpayer in both Whatcom and Chelan counties, a native of Wenatchee, and one who grew up in a hunting family, the statements by Commissioner Thorburn denigrate the broad-based desire of the Wildlife Commission to manage wildlife for all its residents, not a small percentage. Hunting is a important piece of Washington's history. The Sierra Club does not make statements against hunting and supports it. However, the wildlife in our state, as managed by the Department of Fish and Wildlife, is supposed to be representative not just of hunters, but of all the community and all the residents of this state who want wildlife to be managed in a way that represents all of our values, not the select.
Thank you, Doctor. If you'd hold on a minute, please. Commissioner McIsaac has either a question or a comment.
Sure.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a quick question with regard to your comment that the current training program is not based on science. I wondered if you could give one reason, your best reason, your best one example, your best example of where the current proposal is not based on science.
Sure. In part, it doesn't have limits regarding how far the cougars can be chased. It doesn't address whether or not they will be separated from their kits. It doesn't address specifically when the part of the issue, I think, with the current rule is that it doesn't address when the houndsmen come into the area and then who can be led back to the area to hunt the next day. It doesn't address the range specifically of the cougars. Male cougars have a 100-mile range, and other male cougars cannot be within that range, and the male cougars don't allow for that, and there's competition.
Thank
and
you.
The female cougars have a 60-mile range.
Yeah. Thank you. I was looking for your one best example, so thank you.
Okay, thank you. Nikki, next, please.
Next, we have Michael Henderson, followed by Jared Bronco.
How many more do we have, Nikki?
I've got 24, no more added.
Well, we were at 24 about a half hour ago, so some must have been added.
There was a couple.
Don't add any more.
Okay.
We're behind schedule significantly, so. Okay, thank you.
Go ahead and unmute yourself, Michael.
Okay. Good morning. First, I'd like to thank the commissioners for their service. I worked in local government for 19 years, and I can imagine that your service is significant and often thankless. By way of introduction, I'm a recreational fisherman, and I'm a Washington native who fished for salmon with my dad as a boy in the 60s. Then adulthood took over, and I took 35 years off for college, career, and family. I retired 3 years ago, moved to Whidbey Island, and have fished the last three seasons in the North Puget Sound, Strait of Juan de Fuca, and the San Juans. In order to do this fishing, I purchased a four-season boat, a boat, I might add, that was built in Washington. I have a large investment in this boat, motor, trailer, and equipment, and I'm not alone. These purchases generated almost $10,000 in sales tax revenue for the state, to give you some idea of the economic impact of fishing, which can be multiplied by hundreds of other fishermen such as myself. The reason I asked to speak today was to voice my frustration over the lack of a winter blackmouth season this winter. I have studied this issue in some depth, but I will admit I can't compete on knowledge of the subject with the professionals who've been working on this for years and even decades. I know it is a very complex issue. My simple request is that the negotiators in the North of Falcon process this year do whatever they must to make sure that the lack of a winter blackmouth season is a one-time occurrence. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for your comments, Michael. Nikki, next, please.
So we've got Jared Bronco followed by Gregory Holmes. Go ahead, Jared.
Hello, and thank you for the opportunity to speak. My name is Jared Bronco, and I'm a self-titled adult onset conservationist and hunter. I believe all wild animals have a right on the landscape and should be wherever their presence is feasible. Since humans have massively interrupted the natural habitat of these animals, we must understand that animal populations must be monitored and adjusted through all tools available to us. This includes hunting. Recently, there have been headlines claiming that spring bear seasons were under threat in Washington. After a little further investigation past the headlines, I saw that your meeting minutes rebuked those who were outright against spring bear seasons, reminding them of the season's usefulness in managing the bear population. I very much appreciate that. I'm sure as you're aware that Washington has some of the highest black bear numbers in the lower 48 states, which means we must use all tools of population management available to us. I want to restate my desire to see all animals on landscape, including predators like black bears, cougars, and wolves. However, I will also want to make clear that in my opinion, hunting should always be a part of the management solution for those predators. With my leftover time, I also wanted to touch on the issue of e-bikes on public lands. Right now, only roads that allow motorized vehicles are allowed to have e-bikes on them. As a compromise, I would hope that the commission would consider allowing closed logging roads to e-bikes, as the logging operations have already disturbed the natural landscape, and the bikes, I can't see how they can affect it more than a bulldozer going through making a road on the side of a hill. Single track trails, in my opinion, would be very challenging to use e-bikes on. So I think that that's an option to leave that alone for now and maybe investigate in the future. Thank you for your time and have a good weekend.
Thank you, Jared, for your comments. Nikki, next.
If I unmuted myself. Okay, next we've got Gregory Holmes followed by David Lynn. Go ahead, Gregory.
Can you hear me?
We can. You're a little soft.
Okay. Great. Thank you. So I just wanted to speak up briefly in support of the spring bear season and just bear hunting in general. This is an activity that multiple generations in my family have enjoyed. My father, myself, and now two of my three young daughters have joined me in the field to hunt. It's a renewable, reliable food source for our family. It provides for outdoor recreation and exercise and memories that we all hold very dear to us for a very long time. In addition to those benefits to myself, it adds to a great deal of revenue for the state to aid in conservation opportunities. With regard to past meetings and input from some folks that are outside the state, I would like the commission to hopefully consider opinions of residents, or if they are non-residents, only those non-residents that are contributing to wildlife management and conservation in the decision-making process. Out-of-state advocacy groups that don't contribute to our state conservation practices, I don't feel they really have much room at the table. And then a couple other subjects I wanted to touch on. I am in support of the hound training program. And with regard to the e-bikes, if an area is considered non-motorized, an electric motor falls under the category of motors, so they shouldn't be allowed in those areas. There's a lot of land out there that's available to motorized travel, and I think we need to conserve what is classified as non-motorized for that reason. That's all I have. Thank you.
Gregory, thank you for your comments. Nikki, next, please.
Next, we have David Lynn, followed by Kelly Balcombe-Bartok. Go ahead, David.
Good morning, commissioners. My name is David Lynn from Ocean Shores, representing myself in support of wildlife and wild places. And so first, I'd like to thank Commissioners Kehoe and Smith for their service and for listening to me for these past several years. I really appreciate that, and best wishes in going forward. And also to welcome Commissioners Coons and Smith, and hope that they will give me the same opportunity to listen to my comments and thoughts over the next several years. I plan to continue with this. So my comments today, later this morning, you'll be hearing about the WDFW Managed Non-Lethal Pursuit Training Program. The staff will ask the commission for a decision on the proposed non-lethal pursuit pass program to ensure an opportunity for handlers to keep their dogs trained. While the description of the program uses the word non-lethal, its goal is entirely lethal. That is, the purpose is to train hounds to track wildlife such as cougars and bears so that they may be killed by the department. The department states that, quote, the proposed commission rule emphasizes safe, ethical, responsible, and lawful hound hunting practice, as well as detection of specific wildlife species by dogs. The goals of the non-lethal pursuit training pass program include improving dog handler department relations, effective detection of target species when requested, and the ethical treatment of working dogs and wildlife. This training is neither safe nor ethical for wildlife, dogs, or humans. For the wildlife that is targeted, being chased and hounded inflicts great physical stress and mental trauma upon them. Dogs, the training causes them to become vicious and aggressive. Humans, it reinforces the idea that wildlife are simply objects that are disposable if they are inconvenient. There's a risk that the dogs will get loose from their handlers and will injure or be injured by the wildlife that they are pursuing. For instance, a mother cougar with kittens may attack the pursuing dogs to protect her young. She may kill or be killed. Training in wolf territory can lead to conflict if the dogs pass through a wolf pack's rendezvous site. There is never a good outcome from these interactions. I think that the department acts far too quickly to kill wildlife, especially predators. I have reviewed numerous department incident reports over the past several years, which have resulted in the killing of predators after conflict with livestock. I believe the department should focus more on educating the public about how to avoid this conflict and less on killing wildlife. As it now stands, sending out the houndsmen to kill seems to be the department's first response. It should be its last response. I have cougars, bears, and coyotes that pass through my backyard, and the last thing I would do is to inform the department because I fear the results. By reducing hounding of wildlife, we can limit the need for this proposed training, and I oppose this proposal and ask that you do the same. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for your comments, David. Nikki, next.
Next is Kelly Balcombe-Bartok, followed by Toby Cooper. Go ahead, Kelly.
All right. Thank you, Nikki. Can you hear me?
Yep, we can hear you.
Excellent. Thank you. And thank you, Honorable Chair and the committee, for your time and all your efforts on behalf of the wildlife of the state of Washington. And good luck to the two leaving and welcome to the two that are joining. You have your work cut out for you, and I appreciate all you do. So thank you on behalf of your thoughtful deliberation and everything in your time and efforts on behalf of our beloved southern resident killer whales. I know that the decision in December was not an easy one for you to make. However, I want to make it a strong point that, it needless to say, the PWWA, the Pacific Whale Watch Association, and a broad coalition of orca experts are disappointed and concerned by the decision to remove professionals from the mix for much of the year. I know everyone involved throughout this process have the best interests of the Southern residents in mind, no doubt about that. But frankly, emotions clouded facts, agendas twisted policies, and science has had to admit that they don't really know if the Sentinel effect is real. And I'm here with 45 years of experience to tell you it is. I know from firsthand experience leading the effort in 1997 to protect and rescue 19 LPOD killer whale members who became entrapped in Dyes Inlet in 97, three of which did not survive the winter, and only six of the original 19 are still alive today. The trusting and adoring public to follow the rules around whales is optimistic, but not realistic. During the 30 days the whales were trapped in Dyes Inlet, I watched on one Saturday as 500 private boaters overwhelmed the whales on that beautiful sunny day. Even with enforcement and Coast Guard present, they were simply overwhelmed by it all. So in 2021, enforcement will have their work cut out for them, especially without trained professionals to help mitigate things. But that said, now you have a unique opportunity to test the Sentinel effect. And I can't stress enough the critical importance of this study in 2021 and 2022. And it would be incredibly unfortunate for the whales, especially, to not capitalize on this opportunity to document the value and importance of the presence or lack thereof of those trained professionals. This is a chance to respect and honor your adaptive management policy that WDFW and I hold in such high esteem. If forever left to not enough evidence, I fear the whales will only suffer more. So please use this time well to study this Sentinel effect and revisit this and keep considering the Sentinel actions and the possibility that whale watching and whale watchers may in fact be a benefit and not a detriment to whales. On another note, personally, as communications director for Pacific Whale Watch Association, I want to publicly thank your staff, Nate, Julie, and Aaron, for coming out of vacation on December 23rd to assist me in an attempt to correct an incorrect statement the Associated Press ran with that went national following your WDFW decision to restrict SRKW specifically whale watching. In the Associated Press brief, they inadvertently left out the SRKW, implying these restrictions were for all orcas, which is simply patently misleading. And of course, the PWWA phones began to ring with questions and threats of cancellations. So they got a real taste with me. And again, I thank them, Nate, Julie, and Aaron. They got a real taste of the communication challenges the professional whale watching community faces on a regular basis and how important good communication really is. And so I just, again, thank you for all these challenges. Pay close attention over the next 2 years to the Sentinel effect. Please study it. Can't stress that enough. And thank you for your time and effort. And I look forward to working with you further. Have a wonderful day.
Kelly, thank you for your comments. You as well. Next, Nikki.
Got Toby Cooper followed by Aaron O'Leary. Go ahead, Toby.
Thank you and good morning, Chairman Carpenter and the other good members of the commission. So I'll address the hound pursuit. I am not persuaded by the proposal, not only because it would result in unacceptable and unnecessary harassment of wild cougars, but also because it leaves me with very little confidence that actual serious hound training is built into the plan. I reviewed the legislation as others have and find that it authorizes the department, as we know, to provide for training. It doesn't specify, nor does it rule out simply permitting the hounding of wild cougars. So the proposal may not fall under a non-conforming status, but it certainly falls far short of what it could be. So in looking into this, I found that the Michigan Bear Hunters Association would describe the activity outlined in the plan as a popular activity they have in Michigan called catch and release. It goes something like this. You load up your dogs in the truck kennels, you load up family and friends in the trucks, you go through the rural forest roads or areas of Northern Michigan, and you let the specialized dogs called cold scent dogs out to try to find a scent. And once they do, if the scent heats up, they release the rest to chase and tree the bear, sometimes for miles. Then it's high fives all around and pack up the dogs and go home. So that's catch and release. That's what is being proposed in this plan. It's what they do on weekends. And calling it training is sort of, it's like Russell Wilson coming off the field after the Rams game and saying, well, we lost the game, but it was a great training opportunity. No, Russell, that was the game. We know training when we see it. In the case of the Seahawks, you'll see the players on the field in sweatpants running pass patterns and the linemen pushing sleds loaded with sandbags. That's training. But like the Seahawks not needing the Rams for training, the hounds in training do not need live cougars. There's two components to training, really of any athlete, human or animal. There's the skills and fundamentals, and there's conditioning. Skills and fundamentals in the case of these dogs involves following a scent, working as a pack, following commands, bonding with the handler and all that. And conditioning, of course, involves running running on a scent, running on a trail. Both of these can be accomplished without resorting to wild cougar harassment. These are things that can occur. Training, like working as a pack, following commands and so forth, can be done in a backyard or, you know, an open area.
At time, Toby.
Oh, okay. So all I can say is that this could be designed without resorting to the harassment of the cougars. And I just would close by saying that I understand and in fact respect the passion that the dog or the hound handlers have for their animals and for their sport. And I think that we can accomplish something for them in a controlled set of circumstances, leaving the wild cougars alone. And the hounds will know exactly what to do when they're called for personal safety. Thank you.
Toby, thank you for your comments. Next, Nikki.
Next is Aaron O'Leary, followed by Lynn Mason. Go ahead, Aaron.
Hi, I'm Aaron. I'm a fishing guide in Forks. I just wanted to provide a little update on the emergency rules on in Forks area. There are much fewer anglers out here than I think anyone anticipated. During a holiday weekend, three-day weekend, conditions were perfect on sole duck. And in years past, there would have been 10 to 15 boats a day. This year, there was 1 to 3 boats in the section I fished. It was unbelievably light pressure. I've also had a few older guys fish with me that have fallen and filled their waders up. And that's just, you know, it's a tough thing, especially January on the Olympic Peninsula trying to winter steelhead fish. And with the Skagit and Sauk being open to fishing from a boat 4 days a week, which is something that a lot of people talked about to the department, which they said wouldn't work out. I'm interested to hear how that management situation on the Skagit and the Sauk is different than on the Quileute and Hoh, especially with the Quileute being 3,400 fish over escapement, whereas the Skagit and Sauk are 300 fish over escapement, and they're open through April 15th. I'm just really wondering why that wasn't an option for the Quileute and the Hoh. Also, the pressure shift that the department was worried about really should not be an issue anymore with the Skagit and Sauk opening. So I think that these emergency regulations should be reevaluated, and we should be able to fish from a boat on the Quileute and the Hoh. Thanks for your time. I appreciate it, and thank you.
Aaron, thank you for your comments today. Nikki, next.
Next is Lynn Mason, followed by Jerry Anderson and Rita Kinney. Go ahead, Lynn.
Good morning. Can you hear me?
Yep, we can hear you.
Great. Hi, I'm Lynn Mason. I'm a resident of Klickitat County. I'd like to first say welcome to the new commissioners. Firstly, I want to say that I do not support the non-lethal pursuit training program and I'm pretty sure that most voters would agree if they were asked. There have been improvements made to the proposal since December, but it has a long way to go. So I'm asking and recommending that the commissioners make a motion to not adopt the proposed program as is and ask for more time and refinement of this program. It is critically important to get it right to avoid unintended outcomes. Sheriffs interpreting it as they see fit, and a very angry public response when things go wrong. Hound hunting is a sensitive and contentious issue in the state, and the voters spoke 24 years ago about that. In Klickitat County, we already have 8+ hound hunting posse regularly getting practice hunting down cougars and killing them. How is that going to be taken into account in this county where we are already at an 82% harvest rate when Fish and Wildlife recommends it to be in the 12 to 16% range? Also, Fish and Wildlife are not the authorities taking cougar calls in our county, as the sheriff has officially bumped Fish and Wildlife out of the way. There's no need for practicing hound hunting pursuits in our county, as we already have a large active and practicing posse of hound hunters. We have an unsustainable kill rate. Our cougar population is overstressed enough. And we have a sheriff that has taken over Fish and Wildlife's job with 100% kill rate of cougars that they find. Please consider the impact to all counties when you decide on this program. Our sheriff has made it okay to find loopholes in laws and interpret them how he sees fit. How will this program be any different if we continue to formulate laws, rules, and programs that have gaping holes and are ripe for misinterpretation? Some of the problem areas that I see, looking at the current Washington Administrative Code 220-412-130, it states that working dog handlers are held to a highest ethical standard. It goes on to say that they need to own and train their own working dogs and maintain health records of working dogs and have active knowledge of predator detection and pursuit training techniques. How will this information be verified, especially if they're non-residents? What about dog obedience? Search and rescue dogs and police dogs have strict obedience standards and ability to recall. Hounds are notorious for being difficult obedience students. How are you going to ensure that the handler will be able to call his dogs off a pursuit and not injure the cat or kittens or kill them? And kittens who will not so quickly be able to climb or escape.
And you're at time.
There are two other issues that I have. One is the firearms discharge. The wording should read that there should be no firearm discharge allowed. And also So I ask you commissioners to please consider all counties when you're making your decision. And I thank you for your time today.
Lynn, thank you for your comments. Nikki, how many more people do we have left? We're getting significantly behind schedule.
We've got 13, and I haven't said yay to any more, so.
Yeah, well, don't add more. I would request, not mandate, I would request they reduce their time to 2 minutes, please.
Okay, next we got Jerry Anderson and Rita Kenny. Make sure to unmute yourself. There you are.
Yep, I did. Okay, good morning. My name is Jerry Anderson. I live in rural Spokane County, where wildlife is plentiful. As a lover of the outdoors, both wilderness and wildlife, I strongly oppose everything about this pursuit training. Since an incident several weeks ago where WDFW contracted hunters who illegally trespassed on private land to kill a cougar where I live, I have studied as much material as possible and read documentation and heard testimony from wildlife experts who all think this is a very bad idea. Even scientists and other staff members within WDFW do not agree with this proposal. I'm wondering why the leadership of WDFW and commissioners are not consulting these experts instead of pandering to a very specific hunting lobby. The charter of this commission is to establish policies to preserve, protect, and perpetuate wildlife, fish, and wildlife and fish habitat. It shall also maximize fishing, hunting, and outdoor recreational opportunities compatible with healthy and diverse fish and wildlife populations. You cannot have the latter without the former. Needlessly removing cougars in the interest of public safety does not support this. I am not against hunting in general. I'm opposed to causing harm to wildlife needlessly and justifying killing cougars in the interest of public safety. There is no data to support this type of training will do anything but stress the cougar population with potential for increased dangerous cougar hound and cougar human interaction. There have been only two fatal cougar attacks in the past 100 years in our state, yet the killing of cougars has risen exponentially over the past 5 years. We can debate the definition of public safety, but there is no data to support killing cougar enhances safety to the public, and many experts report exactly the opposite. Therefore, there is no need to pursue training that would ultimately result in cougar elimination. There are other ways to train hunting dogs than this type of training that is anything but non-lethal and only hurts wildlife. Moreover, allowing up to four family members to attend this training simply adds more potential hunters used to eliminate cougars while also putting them at risk. Instead of spending money on this nonsensical training that only harms wildlife, why not spend the money on educating the public on how to protect themselves and their pets and livestock and mitigate interaction with cougars and other predators? I strongly urge the commission to consult educated experts who have studied wildlife for a lifetime in order to properly decide before voting on this measure and hopefully coming to the conclusion this training is not only not needed, but goes against the charter of this commission. I'll turn it over to my partner, Rita Kinney, now. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Rita Kinney and I live in Spokane. First of all, I want to establish that members of my family hunt, and when I had residents in Yak, Montana, all of my neighbors hunted, which I respected. I say this so that my position against the program will not be immediately dismissed as more anti-hunting sentiment, as certain commissioners would have you believe. Here are my reasons for opposing the non-lethal pursuit training program. One, there's nothing non-lethal about it. Hounds chasing predator situations can turn dangerous and deadly at any time, deadly for the hounds and the prey. Two, the proposal defies the will of the people who clearly voted they did not want cougar pursuits by hounds in 1996 by passing I-655. Three, this proposal is not necessary. Hounds can be easily trained in other ways without cougar harassment. Four, last and most importantly, this proposal is dangerous to the public. Ironically, the program is being purported as necessary for public safety so that the hounds can have training and be effective when an often questionable removal is ordered. I feel the WDFW endangered public safety last November when they contracted for a cougar removal on Tower Mountain above our property. The cougar was chased through our properties by hounds, treed, and shot, even though the livestock owner did not want the cougar killed and admitted they did not practice predator diversion techniques. This pursuit and removal was also done against the will of most of the immediate property owners. It is private land where we hike through the woods frequently, and apparently the WDFW and the houndsmen who trespassed have no thought to the safety that my grandchildren, myself, and my pet could have been in the fray. The chase was dangerous regardless of the killing, and now the commissioners want to sanction more chases with this program? No one knows which way a terrified pursued animal will run. Have the commissioners even considered the harm that could happen if the chase ended up on a hiking trail where a family with children were enjoying the outdoors? You are probably thinking that's a highly unlikely situation, but it happened just 2 months ago in my own backyard. From what I understand, this proposal does not specify rules of training and accountability for the performance of houndsmen, which leaves it wide open for abuse and the chance of greater public harm. In the name of public safety, I urge the commissioners to table or vote no on this pursuit training program. Thank you for your attention.
Thank you for your comments as well. Nikki, next, please.
Next is Deborah Chase, followed by Rexanne Auer. Go ahead, Deborah.
Good morning, commissioners, WDFW staff, and good morning to all of you in the audience today. I'm Deborah Chase, the CEO of the Mountain Lion Foundation. First, I'd like to welcome our new commissioners and say so long to those leading the commission. We are living in a critical time for our people and our planet. We're in the middle of a sixth mass extinction of wildlife and a worldwide pandemic. There is extreme divisiveness among our citizens, not just here in Washington, but in our country. People are wounded and scarred, and yet burned as we are by pessimism, We are still counting on our leaders from all areas of government to serve from the heart, to use the best science and the most intelligent minds as guides to make sound decisions for us. As leaders and trustees of the beauty and bounty of this state, you have had multiple opportunities to do everything within your power to create safe rules and sound policies that protect our natural resources for the benefit of all. And yet, in the year or so that I have been coming to these meetings, I have to say, you have not failed to disappoint. We have asked you to consider public safety, and you place the citizens of the state in greater jeopardy. We ask that you use the best science in wildlife management, and that science is ignored. We ask for you to listen to your own biologists, some of whom are the best in the country, yet again and again you dismiss their work, step on their knowledge, and ignore their pleas for attention. I hazard a guess that as a result, morale at WDFW is probably pretty low. And now, with the two pieces of press that have accused the conservation community and 97% of Washingtonians of a culture war against the hunting community, you have gone beyond your role and stepped outside of your lane. You have incited people to bring divisiveness to this forum and allowed other trustees to do the same. And that is nothing short of negligent. It is disrespectful to the position, to the governor that appointed you, the Senate that confirmed you, and to the citizens you failed to acknowledge. As the world is in a place of critical decision-making, so are you. You can continue to act in this way, imagining yourselves in a black and white battle in which you must only defend legal hunting, or you can choose another option to honor and address the shared values of all the citizens of this state. To choose the former is to show that you are not fit to hold the post, and the only solution would be for you to make a peaceful transition to another role. To choose the latter shows that you care about all of us, and perhaps gain back your servant's heart. I remind all of you that there is no obligation more binding than the one you are given to protect the land we all cherish and to defend the wildlife that cannot defend itself. To do so is to nurture everything in our natural world, and that in turn nourishes us. Thank you.
Thank you, Deborah, for your comments. Next, Nikki.
Next is Roxanne Auer, followed by Greg Hoskins. Go ahead, Roxanne. Make sure you're unmuted. There you go.
Hi. Thank you so much for taking my comments. I just need trying to get my comments pulled up here in front. I'm trying to close this up. First, I'd like to second the comments of many of those who have spoken already so that I can shorten my comments, especially Deborah Chase and Michelle Blake. It couldn't have been said better. I'm here to speak against the Hound Hunter Training Program. I think it's imperative that you table this decision until more work can be done to incorporate the public's concerns with this program and ensure that the program doesn't exacerbate an already unsustainable situation going on out there with mountain lions. Several concerns with the hound hunting program were brought to the attention of the commission by the public the last time this was discussed, and nothing's been done really to alter the program to address these concerns. 20 cougars have been killed in the last year in Clickitat County by Sheriff Songer and his Hound Hunter posse members. This number has probably risen by now. When you add this to the number of what hunters are allowed to take, it adds up to cougars being decimated in the county, with upwards of 80% of the population being killed, when the commission's own policy puts a sustainable kill rate at 16%. The sheriff in Clickitat is using a loophole to do this. He's hunting and killing every cougar he can find. He has even stated that he is interested in wiping out the population of cougars in the region, whether or not they're a threat or a problem. He's promoting this practice to other sheriffs in the region. In short, this is an emergency. If left unchecked, this practice of killing all cougars on site will lead to catastrophic impacts on this species. At the same time, studies show us that killing large numbers of mountain lions only increases the chances of depredation and interactions with humans. So this makes everyone more unsafe. It's not helping the situation in any way. It's astounding to me that during this situation, this emergency, that what the WDFW is talking about is allowing hound hunters to get trained up so they can be even more effective at killing cougars. I believe there's a massive disconnect between the will of Washington voters and the state agency tasked with protecting and preserving wildlife for all of Washington's residents. And I urge you to table the hound hunting program for further discussion. Thank you very much for taking my comment.
Thank you for your comments, Roxanne. Nikki, next.
Greg Hoskins, followed by Buddy Woodbury. Go ahead, Greg.
Can you hear me?
We can hear you.
Thanks for giving me the chance to speak. I'll try to go fast. My name's Greg. I live in Klickitat County with my wife and two children, and we are opposed to the hunting dog training program. We've seen cougars on our game cameras, and 2 years ago, we all watched a cougar walking on our property. It remains one of the most special moments we've experienced as a family. We do not fear mountain lions, my children included. We feel lucky to live in a place natural enough to support them. I would not call our sheriff's hotline to report a cougar minding its own business on my property, and I'm completely opposed to houndsmen chasing them across my property. I don't understand the purpose of this program. It is not about public safety. Only 17 people have been killed in North America in 100 years. Predation of livestock is rare and manageable by other means. This is a solution in search of a problem. For perspective, up to 400 Americans die annually due to motor vehicle collisions with deer. That's something cougars can help us with. If a cougar causes a problem, it should be dealt with by professional wildlife managers. Allowing 50 unsupervised amateurs with untrained dogs to chase cougars or whatever other wild animals they happen to discover does nothing to protect the public. In fact, it will likely exacerbate any problems by disrupting the cougar population. Even though this training program claims the hunted animals will not be killed, dogs may end up killing wildlife anyway, or maybe kill themselves. God forbid if a hunter or spectator ends up being attacked. When chased, a cougar will naturally defend itself. Will it then be okay to kill it? Washington citizens, including 59% of Klickitat County, voted to end dog sport hunting in 1996. Hunters can now buy the very popular big game hunting package and have the chance to legally hunt a cougar. I imagine many of these hunters will not be happy if dog hunters are allowed to eradicate cougars. This is a thinly veiled plan to bring back dog hunting for sport and should not be allowed. Thank you.
Thank you, Greg, for your comments. Nikki, next, please.
Next, we've got Buddy Woodbury, followed by Rachel Bjork. Go ahead, Buddy.
I first want to, if you can hear me, I want to apologize to Chairman Carpenter specifically. I did not want to testify today. We had our people who were talking, calling me, asking, do we testify? And the answer was no. We wanted to trust the process. And so I'm asking you, and I'm really strongly urging you guys to just trust the process. We went through the process 4 years. We've sat down. I mean, I've sat in a meeting with Bob McCoy. I invited him to us before the meeting so we could talk and listen to his groups, his concerns. After the meeting, we joked, we shook hands, and he learned that we love cougars as much as he did. He went back into his truck. He brought us a gift, and he brought some calendars to us. We said, thank you. We left in good spirits. And what's happened? What's changed? The only thing I can tell you is the national advocacy groups are sitting down and going propaganda. And it's ridiculous, and it's really disheartening for me. And I'm sorry I sound a little frustrated, because I am. I'm hearing people talk about family members. That's my 11-year-old boy, my 9-year-old girl. You see on that picture right there with my dog, Shelby. And she's my top cougar dog right now. I'm going to take her in a week. I'm going to go call her some cougars for a biologist. That was a training day there. And that picture right there, those two little kids helped me train my dogs. And it was just a walk in the woods. But you know what? If they smell a cat, and if that dog would have come up to a cougar track, to let that puppy just sit there and smell that cougar track, right now, technically, that's illegal. So can I let that puppy wag its tail a little bit? I'm hearing a lot of these, and I'm not prepared, so I apologize. But what you're hearing, the biologist, all this stuff, this thing is getting blown up at the very end, and it's really frustrating. We sat down for 4 years. This unanimous Democrats, Republicans, governor, one Democratic senator objective, and his staff, he wouldn't meet with me, and his staff asked me, he said, why is this going? And I said, you know why? Because our two groups are getting together and we're talking. We're not throwing rocks and sticks at each other and calling each other names. We were talking together. We were sitting at the table with Bob McCoy, with HSUS, with Conservation Northwest, all of us sitting together, listening to each other and addressing those concerns. So what you're hearing today, I'm not liking myself. If what these guys are describing we are, I don't like myself. That's not what this is. My little girl would not be loving dogs if they were just ruthless killers that ran up and killed kittens. I can't stress that enough. So we didn't bring in a bunch of guns to make this testimony last twice as long, because we could have done the same and we didn't. And it's out of your courtesy for your time. I'm going to wrap this up, but I really I told her, we got to trust the process. The process here happened, and at the last minute, it's getting blown up. And so I just strongly urge you to do the process. We can talk about cougar management and killing cougars. This is about training a dog as a tool for if you need it for biology or if you need it for a public response. I don't care what you do with the cougar. I don't care if you kill it. I don't want them killed. I don't shoot cats. I like cats just as much as anybody. I just want the dog to be trained. And so I'm going to wrap up my testimony, and I do apologize that you guys have had to listen for an hour of this. Thank you.
Buddy, thank you for your comments. Just a heads up to the commission, when we finish public comment, we'll go to the director's report. I guess at that point in time, we will take a short break after the director's report for 10 minutes instead of later, and then we'll come back and go to agenda item 4. Nikki, next.
Next is Rachel Bjork, followed by V60. I'll have them state their name. Go ahead, Rachel.
Hi, can you hear me okay?
Yep, we can hear you.
Thank you. I just want to thank the commissioners and the department staff, particularly the department staff. I know that they put a lot of time and effort into these meetings. I also want to thank the new commissioners for coming on board. After it is safe to have in-person meetings, I really hope that you will continue to allow for remote access to these meetings as it allows more citizens to participate. Personally, I've never been able to attend in-person meetings because of my job, and I expect this is the same for many other citizens. I'd like to address the grazing allotments issue. I do agree that monitoring needs to be done on grazing allotments. I'm encouraged that the department might be added language to allow for these permits to be discontinued. I'm troubled that any non-native species are allowed to graze on public lands at all. with respect to the previous caller, public comment is part of the process. And, you know, I've been listening to the whole thing and nobody has been called any names. So, with regard to the cougar hunting, the expanded harassment of cougars with the training program, I do agree with the previous callers that are also opposed to the pursuit program. I'm very much opposed to a program that would allow people to harass cougars with their dogs. Quite often these cougars pose zero threat to public safety and they merely make the mistake of being seen. Let's not forget the cougars were here first and we do live on their land. Let's please focus on living with them instead of recruiting dogs into the dangerous practice of harassing them. Please reject this proposal as it will only get abused as seen in Klickitat County. Thirdly, considering that only a small percentage of Washingtonians hunt, the department and commission spends an inordinate amount of time making sure that people can hunt and fish and have easy access to hunting and fishing opportunities. Just look at the website and the majority of the information on there is about promoting hunting and fishing. So I find it shocking and disturbing that any of the commissioners would make the claim that the department or the commission is anti-hunting. I mean, you recently approved a spring bear hunt despite the fact that it will lead to the death of nursing mothers and orphan bear cubs. Finally, I'm troubled that public comment is being cut off because it started late due to some of the commissioners not being able to concisely report on committees. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you for your comments. Nikki, next, please.
Next is V60 followed by Robert Sudar. Let's see, V60, can you state your name for the record? Make sure to unmute yourself. There we go. We can't hear you. Are you there? Hello? Like I hear something. I'm going to mute him and go to Sudar and come back. Go ahead, Robert.
Thank you, commissioners. This is Robert Sudar from Longview, a Columbia River Commercial Advisor. I'd like to thank you for the opportunity to speak today. I just want to add a few comments to what Commissioner McIsaac said about the joint meeting with Oregon from a couple days ago. I was really disappointed in hearing the comments from Oregon staff. It was a clear lack of understanding by their new commissioners, including the chair, over even how fisheries are managed on the Columbia, the role of the compact. It was very disappointing. The chair suggested that there was no urgency in dealing with this concurrency issue or non-concurrency issue and the proposed revisions from Washington. And that's an insult to the people in their own state who worked for several years on working with Washington to come up with these ideas. And it's also an insult to the Washington Commission, which you all know have spent thousands of hours on these Columbia River management issues. And it's an insult to Lower River communities and the commercial fishermen fishing in the lower rivers, providing food fish to the public. The discussion focused on the task force reports and talked a lot about the problems with smolt to adult recruitment. And that is a problem. There's no doubt about it. The dams are the primary cause. Harvest is not a factor in that. They also said that the task force decisions would not be considering allocation. The status quo will not do anything to improve conservation or recovery. The impacts will stay the same. So the same number of ESA mortalities would potentially occur whether there is a change in the policy. And so the policy has never been about conservation or recovery. The status quo would also continue the economic losses incurred by the commercial industry. And those losses have been quantified by staff reports in both states. And those losses are contrary to both the policy and law in Washington and rule and law in Oregon. And so it's a lot of years to try this policy, see how it's worked. And the staff has shown that it's not working. These are modest changes. They become more important this year because of improved predictions. The summer run is likely to be improved even over last year. There would be a commercial allocation for those fish. They are not ESA listed. We do not fish selectively for the Chinook, but we are being selective in using gear that doesn't handle the steelhead and sockeye who are in the river at the same time and are ESA listed. And it also would involve more availability to harvest our allocation of fall Chinook throughout the river. I encourage you to keep presenting the science behind the modest September revisions that you approved in your pushing Oregon for a concurrency with your decision that would benefit not just lower river fishermen in our communities, but the citizens throughout the state who depend on Columbia River fishing for part of their access to a local healthy food source. So please keep pushing Oregon. Maybe it's time for the governors to talk about it, like happened in 2012 when Oregon's governor pushed Washington to start this whole policy discussion. It's allowing it just to be another director decision based on the last year is not going to be a good fit in 2021. Thank you very much.
Robert, thank you for your comments. Nikki, next, please.
Okay, we're going to try V60 again, followed by Steph Taylor. Okay, V60, I've asked you to unmute. Okay, we're going to move to Steph Taylor, followed by Marie Newmiller. Go ahead, Steph.
Hi, good morning. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
Hi, my name is Steph Taylor, and I'm the programs manager at the Northwest Animal Rights Network. I'd like to comment on the cougar harassment proposal, but first I want to comment on this public comment process. I'm wondering if perhaps the commission agenda is too stacked if we are having to limit the public's comment period time, which we are legally entitled to. My organization supports the comments presented by the Mountain Lion Foundation. We also oppose lethal management for cougars and other native wildlife, especially by using dogs. Washingtonians already voted against this cruelty under Initiative 655, and current rule states it is unlawful to hunt or pursue black bear, cougar, or bobcat with the aid of dog or dogs. Contractors must also follow the same laws. NARN disagrees, with the commission's decision to increase cougar hunt permit numbers in April. There are non-lethal programs which already exist within the department, and we advocate that those programs should be used first and foremost in response to cougars simply existing. Public safety does not automatically mean dead or harassed cougars. We would like to know what's going on with all these proposals coming out of the department lately to increase the killing and or harassment of wildlife. There's no mention in your mission of the department needing to provide wildlife harassment opportunities for hound handlers to keep their own dogs trained at the expense of taxpayers of Washington State. And for many years, the department has been focused on not only providing more hunting opportunities for the 5% of the Washington population who purchased permits, the department has worked to provide a diversity of hunting in more places and more times during the year. And I want to ask, what about the 95% of the population who value recreational opportunities to enjoy watching wildlife without the threat of running into an armed stranger in the woods or someone who released his hounds to scare away all the wildlife? Dog fitness and training should have been a line item in the hound handler's business plan and should not rest on the shoulders of our state-funded wildlife agency. The language within this proposal also promotes hunting with hounds and shows that this proposal is about providing recreational and spectator sport opportunities. Washingtonians do not want state agency who's tasked to promote the conservation of wildlife supporting or condoning harassing wildlife for entertainment. We would support the department instead focusing its efforts on teaching family and friends how to coexist with cougars. I'm gonna skip down and I'm gonna say in closing, I'm requesting the commission listen to what your own experts say about the rule, including whether it's necessary, the impact it will have on the cougar and wolf populations, the effects it will have on endangering public safety, and finally tabling this proposal until it can be vastly improved. Lastly, we sent over a complaint this morning to the governor's office, the Fish and Wildlife Commission, and the department director against Commissioner Thorburn in relation to the offensive and inappropriate letter to the editor she published recently in The Spokesman. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Next, Nikki.
Next, we've got Marie Newmiller, followed by Sophia Ressler. We only got a couple left. Go ahead, Marie.
Thank you. My name is Marie Newmiller, and I am the Executive Director for the Inland Northwest Wildlife Council based in Spokane, Washington. I want to welcome the new commissioners, Lorna Smith and Fred Koontz, to the commission. I look forward to working with you. RCW 77 mandates that the department and the commission recognize that the management of our state wildlife, food fish, game fish, and shellfish resources depend heavily on the assistance of volunteers. The department shall work cooperatively with volunteer groups and individuals to achieve the goals of this title to the greatest extent possible. In my time with the Inland Northwest Wildlife Council, I've been impressed to see this effort in action. Thank you to Commissioner Molly Linville for working with us on several issues. And thank you to our local representative, Commissioner Kim Thornburn, for working with and teaching the members of the council and even sitting in on some very heated and passionate meetings. I have also been impressed with WDFW staff and their cooperation as well. Hunters and fishers are often painted with words like indiscriminate killers, harassers, bloodthirsty, cruel, egotistical trophy hunters, unethical, and participants in spectator blood sports. These labels could not be farther from the truth. Hunter conservationists love wildlife and wild spaces and understand the valuable tool that hunting, especially predator hunting, can serve to maintain the delicate balance within our regional wildlife populations. We value generational learning and sharing our traditions with our family. I ask that the commission continue the relationships with conservationist hunters and fishers. We love wildlife and we want to protect them. We volunteer thousands of hours each year to further conservation efforts so that our heritage and traditions can be passed to future generations. We may be a small percentage of the state, but our efforts and our works to help protect the species in our state are very large. Again, thousands of hours just from our group alone, and there are many groups out there just like us, quietly participating in conservation efforts. Please continue the relationship and work with us to improve wildlife habitat and wildlife populations. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments, Marie. Nikki, next, please.
Next is Sophia Ressler, followed by Mike Hertz. Go ahead, Sophia.
Thanks, Nikki. Good morning, Chairman Carpenter and members of the commission. My name is Sophia Ressler, and I'm an attorney with the Center for Biological Diversity, which some love to tout as an out-of-state organization, but I am a third-generation Washingtonian who went to school in order to protect the state, which I love. First, I'd like to thank both Commissioner Kehoe and Commissioner Smith for their service and welcome the two new commissioners.
It is wonderful that the commission's structure allows for new members to join and provide fresh ideas and expertise. I hope that everyone gives these new commissioners the chance they deserve to use their impressive backgrounds to assist in your work and affords them the respect and professional decorum they deserve. I'm here regarding today's vote on the Hound Pursuit Training Program and strongly urge this body to forego this vote today in order to rewrite these rules to protect both hounds and wildlife. Notice that I said rewrite, and the people who have testified before me are simply asking that proper safeguards get put in place that assure protection of both wildlife and hounds. If you are a houndsman who trains his hounds in an appropriate way and respects the cougar population, you shouldn't have an issue with rules, which you are likely already following. Rules tend to be for bad actors, which we know exist in the world of cougar pursuit with hounds. That being said, I want to echo what has already been stated regarding changes to the rules to better protect both hounds and cougars. I provided details on my concerns in the written comments I submitted to the commission. I also submitted a second letter to the commission where I drew attention to the fact that this rule requires analysis under the State Environmental Policy Act due to impacts on state endangered gray wolves. The center still believes that to be the case and implores the commission require an accompanying SEPA process for this program. The department's own experts have voiced their concerns about the necessity of this program and the impact it may have on both cougar populations and public safety. Please listen to these staff members and go back to the drawing board on this one. Rushing this through without scientific support or public support actually increases the problem this rule is attempting to solve and makes a mockery of the voters of Washington. Commissioners should direct staff to scrap the current language and start again. Lastly, it seems that public comment is consistently rushed and the commission's agenda is affected by it. That should be taken into consideration and the public input portion of the agenda should be given more time. Thank you for your time and consideration in allowing me to comment.
Thank you for your comment, Sophia. Next, Nikki.
Next, we got Mike Hertz followed by Chris Bachman. Go ahead, Mike.
Hello, can you hear me?
We can hear you.
I just want to talk about the commission and the game department. You guys, I just started getting involved in this stuff kind of a little bit late to the game, but I cannot comprehend your guys' job and stuff that you guys go through. Seems like a very tough job, and I really appreciate your time. I'm calling for the support of the spring bear hunting. And I know we have a spring bear hunt this year, and I'm asking that you guys do not consider ever closing it unless the population plummets, which it's not going to. Right now, in the area I hunt, 12 bears in 3 days. The other thing is people are worried about bears being indiscriminately killed and leaving a bunch of cubs as orphans. First of all, you're discouraged to ever shoot a sow with cubs, which I don't shoot boars only. And if you're worried about orphaning cubs, you want to shoot the boars because the boars are the number one killers of cubs. If you don't believe me, look it up. And lastly, because I know you guys' time is short, the one caller asking about why the wildlife department panders to the hunters, that's probably because we pay for the funds to manage the wildlife. We're the ones buying the licenses, the arms, the ammunition, the bow equipment. We're the ones who are putting into the system. So that's why we get a blind share of the attention. If you want to have more attention, then start paying into it. Buy duck stamps, buy a hunting license, buy a conservation license. But until then, you cannot quiet us when we're the main supporters of the wildlife. And like the other caller said, we care about this wildlife. I like seeing them all, but everything in balance. We have to stop this ballot box management and let the biologists do their job and manage the wildlife like they went to school to do and the state pays them to do it. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you for your comments, Mike. Nikki, next, please.
Chris Bachman, followed by Emeroke Weiss. Go ahead, Chris.
Thank you. Thank you, Nikki. Good morning, Chair Carpenter and Commissioners. My name is Chris Bachman. I'm the Wildlife Program Director at the Spokane-based Lands Council, a locally based advocacy group. And I opt not to reduce my time as requested from 3 to 2 minutes. There was a question about what changed and altered the process in hound hunting. And the answer is that there was an increase in the hunting quota passed in April, which has altered the position of many conservation groups. To Commissioner Isaac, the key piece of science that was not revealed earlier, I would offer that there's a key and basic piece of science missing in that we do not know cougar population numbers, which is fundamental to management. As far as funding, we know it does not all come from hunters. Much of the funding comes from the general fund. We would like to request, and the majority of public comment today supports our ask, that the commission table today's scheduled vote on managed non-lethal pursuit of cougar training. Until the commission has an opportunity to hear from WDFW biologists and what they have to say about the rule, including whether it's necessary to pursue cougar for training in Washington, the impact it will have on cougar and wolf populations, and whether it will impact public safety. A bill passed directing the department to establish a hound pursuit program should not hasten a policy change without an understanding by wildlife managers of its short and long-term impacts. While cougar are being pursued for training, there's a threat to hounds from native gray wolves that must be considered. Hounds entering wolf territory are at risk. Hounds threatened or harmed by wolves while pursuing cougar create another opportunity for wolves to be killed as a result of another avoidable conflict. The impact on endangered wolves, as mentioned previously, requires CEPA. And as you know, Initiative 655 made it clear that the overwhelming majority of Washington voters want it to be unlawful to hunt or pursue black bear, cougar, bobcat, or lynx with the aid of dog or dogs, with the exception of public safety. Hound pursuit itself is not a public safety exception. Chasing cougars with dogs is not a benign activity and can have several adverse consequences for dogs, cougars, and non-target species, including cougar kittens, black bear cubs, deer fawns, and elk calves. Surely such training can be done by proxy without endangering our wildlife. Cougar scent applied to a drag cloth can create a trail that dogs can follow and a tree. One of our greatest concerns regarding Washington's cougars is the misinformed opinions by decision makers, law enforcement officials, and special interest groups that claim that cougar populations are growing to excess and the state needs increased hunting. I have looked into, we don't know cougar population numbers. I've looked into the human growth population in the last 30 years. Ferry County's increased over 1,300, Stevens County over 15,000, and Spokane County over 170,000. So even with stable or diminished cougar population numbers, the number of encounters could easily be on the rise due to the increased human population. We can couple this with the vigilante mentality of local sheriff departments and the encouragement of residents to notify the sheriff and not the Department of Fish and Wildlife, and we have an alternate explanation for the increase in cougar reports. I'm a former science teacher and regularly challenge students with the scientific idiom that correlation does not equal causation. Simply put, just because two things are occurring at the same time, it doesn't mean there's a relationship or that the relationship we expect is the correct one. Contact with wildlife should not be confused with conflict. Conflict does occur. A simple encounter is not a public safety issue and should not lead to the removal of an animal or a prompt change in policy that will harass an animal and put the animal's safety at risk. The cougar population is stressed enough through habitat encroachment and particularly the overuse of quote-unquote public safety management by sheriff's departments, resulting in unregulated removal of hundreds of cats in Stevens and Ferry County. Evidence from public records that I have public records requests show that almost 200 cats were killed by the wildlife conflict specialists that serve Stevens and Ferry County. These public safety cannot adjust or offset harvest numbers. I'm finishing up. Thank you very much. Research shows that when we kill cougar, we get more cougar. More cougar and more people leads to an inevitable cycle of human-wildlife encounters. Essentially, our behavior is perpetuating the problem we hope to solve. Here, correlation is causation. Again, we request that the commission table this vote. Thank you.
Chris, thank you for your comments. Nikki, next, please.
All right, last two, Amaroke Weiss and Tino Villaluz. Go ahead, Amaroke. Make sure to unmute yourself.
Good morning, Chair Carpenter, members of the commission. Thank you for your service for the departing commissioners Kehoe and Smith, and welcome to new commissioners Fred Koontz and Lorna Smith. My name is Amaroke Weiss, and I'm the senior West Coast Wolf Advocate with the Center for Biological Diversity. On behalf of the center's 41,000 plus Washington members and supporters, I'm delivering remarks on three topics, and I opt to use my full 3 minutes. First, regarding the grazing guidance, we urge all commissioners in advance of your own deliberations and casting your votes in February to please carefully read the 16-page comment letter we submitted last fall. I reiterate our view presented in our letter that the department is required to prepare a full environmental impact statement in this matter, its determination and mitigated statement of non-significance is in serious error. The grazing guidance plan's provisions utterly fail to analyze the scientifically documented negative environmental impacts of livestock grazing, and the plan's provisions regarding wolves are inadequately protective of wolves. We also oppose the plan's allowance for wolves to be killed for conflict with livestock on state-owned lands. Secondly, our remarks on civility and government service. On this topic, we echo the view of multiple public commenters so far this morning. We find abhorrent the comments Commissioner Kim Thorburn has recently made in op-eds and interviews with the press. We look to elected and appointed officials to set an example of civility and to represent everyone in the state. Commissioner Thorburn's comments and example fail in both respects. Lastly, our remarks on ethics and hunting. In recent statements and letters to the media and correspondence with members of the public, Commissioner Thorburn, a non-hunter, has declared she has no obligation to consider ethics while weighing her vote on commission topics such as wildlife killing contests, and that opposition by anyone to such treatment of wildlife is anti-hunting. But commission chairs in Oregon and California, both of whom are hunters, disagreed. California then commission chair Michael Sutton, while voting on wildlife killing contests in 2014, said, "The contests are an anachronism and have no place in modern wildlife management." Former Oregon Commission Chair Mike Finley, who prior to being a state wildlife commissioner was the superintendent of four national parks and the president of the Ted Turner Foundation, describes predator killing derbies as stomach-turning examples of wanton waste, and that these killing contests are not responsible hunting. They glorify killing for its own sake and cast Oregon's entire hunting community in a bad light. I am a former hunter, and I disagree that officials making decisions over the state's wildlife need not consider ethics. I was born and raised in Iowa, and my college boyfriend and I routinely hunted pheasants. We ate every bird we shot, and I even tanned their hides to keep their stunningly beautiful plumage and thus honor as best we could that we took this animal's life and that nothing would go to waste. But the day that my boyfriend brought home a fox and a coyote he had shot and killed nearly ended our relationship. No one eats fox or coyote, and no one in Iowa needs a fur coat to survive the winter. One can be a hunter or non-hunter while applying ethical consideration for what is hunted and how the hunting is conducted. In conclusion, in the midst of the twin existential crises of a sixth mass species extinction and human-caused climate change, a lack of ethics considerations in making life or death decisions over other beings is an abject failure in leadership. Thank you so much.
Thank you for your comments, Amaruk. Nikki, please, next.
Okay, next, we've got Tino Villaluz. Go ahead, Tino.
Hello, Chair Carpenter, members of the committee, Director Suswin, and maybe Deputy Director Windrup, if you're there. Thank you for the opportunity today. As a familiar place for me, I think I find myself somewhat on a lonely island, but I wanted to speak to you guys today specifically about the non-lethal hound pursuit rule that's on the table. And if afforded time, I would like to speak directly in support of Commissioner Thorburn after. I think I bring a pretty unique perspective to the table when it comes to the hound pursuit season. One I've been through pretty much the gamut of hound hunting in the state, going back and probably aging myself into the 80s, and then through the ban, through all of the loophole discussions and actions that were at times very ugly, and to the place where we are today, where I think a vetted process is far better than what we're doing. I've spoke to you many times about the threat of county governments taking wildlife management into their control and where that lies in the grand scheme of things. So I think that's a dangerous road to go down. I think this is a responsible decision by the department to go to these. And I also wanted to speak to you on some firsthand accounts of the absolute need for trained houndsmen. There is, for the past 2 years, we've done scoping exercises with the vetted houndsman with the DFW, has gone through the background checks and has very adequate dogs in terms of chasing bears. And this is a straight pursuit scoping exercise. And to be honest with you, it failed miserably. And it has to do with him not having as conditioned a dogs as needed. And to this guy's credit, he travels all over the country with an attempt to try to condition these dogs. And he has a level of commitment far beyond what could be expected from any volunteer that I've worked with. It's very impressive to see both him work and work in conjunction with his dogs. And then the last thing I wanted to touch on, and I'm not going to grandstand about this, but the commitment we have to work together. And this is a collaborative process. If we have vetted houndsmen to work with on the scientific side of things, I cannot conduct the scientific side of things without adequate houndsmen. So
Tino, this is Larry. I would just suggest that maybe you for a moment speak of your affiliation. So the commission members know who you are and your affiliation with the tribes.
My apologies. That should have been addressed right in the beginning. So my name is Tino Villaluz. I'm the wildlife program manager at the Swinomish Indian Tribal Community. We run, numerous studies. We're very active in the research and wildlife management element of wildlife. And my apologies for not starting off with that introduction. So many of the commissioners know me that, it was my bad. So, but yeah, just so the scoping exercises were strictly to draw budgets to conduct cougar population density, cougar population studies. And if we don't have vetted houndsmen and adequate houndsmen, it puts me particularly in a really tough spot. And in terms of what to do to try to, maintain a balanced ecosystem. So I urge you to adopt this rule. I think we could argue about it till, as long as the day is available, we can argue nonstop. So this is, I think, a sound decision, a responsible decision. And then I will stop there and field any questions. And if afforded, I would like to, like I said, address Commissioner Thornburn in a kind way, because I think I owe her a thank you. But I'll stop there. And if there's any questions specifically about hounds and my, I've been through it. I can field a lot of questions, and not to take up your guys' time, be respectful, but I've been through everything from field trials. We did all of that. I've been on many, many chases in multiple states. It's not this horrible villainization that I've seen portrayed today. So I'll stop there, but my main crux is the need for scientific data collection.
Tino, let me ask the commission, any questions from the commission first for Tino? And secondly, is there any objection to him finishing his comment? Go ahead, Tino.
Okay. So I just wanted to address Commissioner Thornburn with a very gracious thank you, because she's not on an island, and I've been a little bit frustrated with the personal attacks on her. We are absolutely in this together, and there's something, like I said, I'm not trying to grandstand about laws, but Article 6, Paragraph 2 of the Constitution has a direct citation about treaties. The treaty is premised largely around consumptive use. Consumptive use is a direct affiliation with hunters. And I think the hunter's voice is being discounted. And I speak for that in a context of we're in this together. And I think we need people like Commissioner Thornburn to call out things. And I appreciate her kind words in regards to where the hunting voice is going in this state. It's a needed element. I mean, not to get too philosophical and be respectful of your time, but it's my identity and everything about me. So I appreciate that. And I'll stop there with a kind thank you for your, bravery in speaking up in a largely unpopular, or I guess uneducated, view of what hunting is and what it is in the state and the heritage that it that goes behind it. So I'll stop right there. Thank you, Commissioner Thornburn.
Tino, thank you for taking the time to call in. Dickie, any more?
Nope, that's it.
Okay.